Well, here he is. Jean-Jacques Cornish returns, our returning champion, to tell us more about the continent that we live on, the continent that unfortunately doesn't get nearly the amount of attention that China, Russia, America, and the UK get. But there are reasons for that too, and this is your chance to catch up on all of that stuff. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School right here on the podcast party. And this morning, JJ is on fire to tell us all about all kinds of things, including Chad, Niger, and where the US have decided to host their latest military conference. So, Jean-Jacques Cornish, nice to see you. How are you?
Bonjour to you. I'm immensely well, and it's kind of you to ask.
So, the US can't very well have their military conference in Chad or in Niger or in Libya. So, where did they decide to have it?
Well, not a million miles removed from where we are now, and that is Botswana. You know, there was a time where we thought that the AFRICOM, which was set up some years back, Africa Command, would be in Botswana, that they would give it full-time accommodation. That's never happened. So AFRICOM is still based in Stuttgart. No African country has offered it, has offered to accommodate it. Well, they're now holding the major U.S. military conference. There's at least 40 African countries participating, and it's under the auspices of AFRICOM, led by, of course, General Michael E. Langley, the commander of AFRICOM at this time. And they're going to be talking about terrorism and the chiefs of defense of these countries. It's the first time, interestingly, that this Africa Chiefs of Defense Conference is happening on the African continent. It was always in other places. It's been happening since 2017. And, you know, they'll be talking, as I say, about terrorism, about security. And there are still some American troops in Chad and Niger. They've been shown the door. And, you know, they had 1,000 there before. They put a lot of money into putting in drones and putting an airport for the drones that were acting against the jihadis. And that hasn't worked. They've been kicked out, essentially. And I've told you in a previous crossing that the Russians had occupied the bases that the Americans had put in. So this is a very big one. I don't know what representation South Africa has at this point, but it's quite a feather in the cap of Botswana that they should be there. Naturally, Kenya, which is has become the United States security partner in Africa, will have a significant presence there.
Isn't that nice, though, of the Americans to build all those bases for the Russians to use? I mean, I think that's really kind. I'm sure American taxpayers are thrilled at their expenditure.
Well, it's damn sporting of them, I think. And, you know, I think their teeth are an edge on this one because, you know, they've got to be very careful in dealing with Africa. They've got to count their words and obviously count their dollars, too. But they are very, very keen to be seen as the presence here against the fundamentalism and extremism and the people, the go-to people in that regard.
So, JJ, I mean, this is obviously a sign of what is going on. America's place in the world is changing, and I think many people have started to sniff this. So you could go all the way back to Gore Vidal's End of the Empire. I think probably America is going to have less to do with Africa in the next 10 years than it ever has in any decade since probably World War II. But who will take its place? Because China and Russia seem to be vying for that position. Are there other contenders?
Well, Turkey is very keen to play a more prominent role, but certainly the two jostling for it would be, and France, of course, once would have seen itself as they had specialists within the Quai d'Orsay that were called Monsieur l'Afrique, you know, the guy that really knew about Africa. And we did have, I think it was President Giscard telling Thabo Mbeki that you don't understand the soul of Africa when we were working on Côte d'Ivoire. So, France has been shown the door. America has been shown the door. Certainly the Russians have tried very, very, very hard. And we've spoken about this foreign minister, been here many, many times to Africa. Defense Minister was here earlier in the month, was in Africa. So they would be the ones. Now, China balks at this a little because they want the commercial ventures in Africa, and they want that to be, they want their muscle to be commercial rather than military. So I would say, who's going to replace America? The one trying the hardest, I would say, would be the Russians. And with Turkey, in terms of peacekeeping and other security operations, playing an increasingly prominent role.
I mean, it's fascinating to see how much things are changing and how quickly they're changing. Let's just turn our attention to another thing that I think you're probably one of the few people who can tell us about this. And you're probably one of the only people in this country who's giving us any idea of what's happening in Uganda, because apparently a tailor there who dressed Lucky Dube has been jailed for possessing military uniforms. I mean, he wasn't trying to pass himself off as a soldier, was he?
Not at all. He is Latif Muloy, and a man who had dreadlocks until he went into prison, and where they cut his dreadlocks off. And he's terribly, terribly upset about that, as would I be if I had dreadlocks. The fact is, what he has done wrong has nothing to do with military uniforms. He has designed the red overalls for, and I know you're going to say the name of a South African politician, not at all. He's designed these red overalls for Bobby Wine. Now, Yoweri Museveni is so scared of Bobby Wine that he locks him up regularly, arrests him, harasses him, because he knows the youth of Uganda have identified with Bobby Wine, and he knows that as political threats arise in his country, Bobby Wine is the top among them. And this man then, being a designer for Bobby Wine, has been arrested. And this is part of the harassment and the pretext of having military uniforms, I think, is a lot of nonsense. But again, Yoweri Museveni knows that he can get away with a lot of nonsense if he wants to.
It's interesting. Uganda comes up quite a lot as quite a regressive place. You know, we talk about progressive, and particularly with a Western lens, that means all kinds of things. It means free speech. It means free expression. It means gay rights. It means all of that stuff. Of course, we are in a continent where there are a multitude of different opinions about all of these matters. Do you have any particular feeling on which country in Africa may be the most regressive as opposed to progressive?
Well, yes, I do. I think Morocco must be among them. Mm-hmm. And I think that Eritrea still is among them. Ethiopia is a very, very, very tough country to be a journalist in. Rwanda, they have an extremely strong president who an absolutist in his way. And Uganda, I mean, Yoweri Museveni, we had Kizza Besigye came and spent many years in exile in South Africa. He goes back. He's a threat to Yoweri Museveni. And he has been arrested, having gone back to Uganda, having returned home. So it's tough. Many of these countries I mentioned, you're fine if you don't oppose the government. But the moment you step in and try to oppose he who must be obeyed, then you land in serious trouble. I do remember not that many years ago when Yoweri Museveni was being touted as the opposition to, in opponent, not opposition, opponent to Madiba as the premier African leader. And I mean, this was in newspapers like the Sunday Independent. Well, we don't talk about that newspaper now, and anything it prints as having any credibility. But back in the day, I remember pieces in it, and to my mind, that it was a particular reporter who was plugging away at it, and everything that Yoweri Museveni was up to was being lauded. That's all slipped now, and he's no longer. I mean, he's a man who's held on for way, way, way too long. Of course, he took over from Idi Amin, you see, and saved the country from the excesses of Idi Amin, and he earned kudos for that. But those have all gone now because he is a truly reported leader.
I mean, Idi Amin is a very low bar, right? I mean, you don't have to be the world's most progressive or thoughtful leader to beat Idi Amin. That's like Savage Banana Republic. I think the term Banana Republic might even come from when he was there. I'm curious because, you know, we tend to put such an emphasis on these things, these progressive values in the West, and with America having receded, as we discussed in the first story so far, it's just interesting to me that,
Republic is a South American thing. But Idi Amin, if you read Private Eye, apparently he caught hold of a young lady and, he gave her a good seeing to in a loo an airport. Yeah. And every time a politician was accused of peccadilloes in Private Eye, he or she was accused of discussing Ugandan affairs. And that means performing U-turns under the duvet, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, we've got you could take your pick because we had in the Central African Republic, what was his name? The guy who built the huge replica of Notre Dame.
Oh, well, maybe.
Bokassa.
Yes. Yeah, Jean Bidal Bokassa, yeah.
Wow. I mean, we've got, we've got some great stories on this continent. So, all right. I'm sad for this man who's, just trying to design clothing and doesn't seem to be a particular threat. But then this is what happens in dictatorships that pretend to be democracies. What about Rwanda? We haven't heard a lot about Rwanda, but there's a good news story in Rwanda that's worth.
Well, it is. You know, we started speaking about tourism in Africa, and there is now cow tourism in Rwanda. And you want to know how in Rwanda they would say that? It's Ibera Iria Bigogwe. And a man called Ngabo, and he doesn't seem to have a surname. During the COVID lockdown, he started sharing photographs of his cows on social media. And more people became interested in everything he had to say about caring for cows, what to do. Now, we talked about countries, beautiful countries, Uganda, one of the most beautiful countries in Africa, and Rwanda, Le Pays de Mille Collines, the country of 1,000 hills, is truly among them too. And Gabo, he now takes tourists to see his cows, and he takes them to milk them. This is normally done by women in Rwanda because they have a very special touch and a special technique in milking cows, but he teaches all the tourists about this. Of course, they what to do with their milk, how to look after them, how to tend to them. Sad to say, he also sells boots, which are clearly made from their hides, and hats that are really made from their hides. But this is rural tourism, and he has a special technique for that. And he's getting something like 20 to 30 tourists a day interested in cow tourism. They come from all over the world in Rwanda. So he complains of only one thing. He's very happy about this booming business, but he doesn't have the capital to build the hotel. He reckons he should be able to accommodate the guests better. So maybe that's checking for some kind of partnership, a capital partnership, in order to expand his business.
All right. Well, I like ending on a high note, and that's a very, very nice story. There's obviously still much to be decided in local politics here in South Africa. And I'm wondering if you're wondering, because you are the guy who probably pays more attention to all of this than any of us do. Do you think there'll be any major changes in our foreign policy with regard to the rest of Africa in a government of national unity, or do you see things being more or less the same?
There's very little movement in foreign policy, generally speaking, and it's not something that wins or loses elections, and I didn't hear about it at the hustings much, but there will be one very big point, and that is Israel. The DA is very strongly supportive of Israel, and as you see, the ANC is very, very condemnatory, and I mean, they're leading the charge at the ICJ. I see Cuba has now joined Brazil and Spain and other countries joining South Africa in its taking Israel to the International Court of Justice. not the International Criminal Court. They are looking at something as well against Israel. But the ICJ, so that's going to be something. I don't know if they are what they are looking for, but if they get the foreign affairs portfolio, we will see some difference there on the approach to Israel.
And by they, you mean any of the other parties but the ANC?
No, I haven't. No, certainly as the major second party in the GNU, Israel, the DA will make its feelings known on Israel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I can't expect you to be Nostradamus. You've already gotten uncovered great stories for us this week, and I'm sure there'll be more the next time we see you. Thank you so much, JJ. Always a pleasure to spend time with you, and have an excellent week.
Thank you. And I have to tell you that I've said this before, I think that as a political forecaster, I make a damn fine fiddle player.
This is African Analysis, which is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School with JJ Cornish.